Hello, everybody. We come to you as the silver anniversary of Nebraska basketball's Big Ten losing streak has commenced. The Huskers have lost 25 straight games, and by the end of the weekend, by the time you listen to this, it might be 26. By the end of the weekend, it might be 27. Hello, everybody. I'm Sam McEwen with the Pick Six Podcast. I am joined today by Evan Bland, Dirk Chatelain, and Tom Chattel, who will be with us here for the first segment of the hour, so to speak. And we're going to talk a lot about the struggles of Nebraska basketball. The 25th straight loss in the league gives us a milestone moment, I think, to unpack some of that, but also gives us an opportunity to talk a little bit just about the general struggles of the school's two major sports, football and men's basketball, and the fact that the two guys that were hired to run those programs are offensive geniuses, or were viewed as that when they came here, and have struggled to install their systems very well in the Big Ten. The Big Ten is, they fought the Big Ten, and the Big Ten so far has won. We'll talk a little bit of the football hires that were this week. There were a couple of those, mostly analyst positions, and then the important director player personnel decision. We might talk some recruiting as well with Evan, some guys that are getting offers. In-state kids, going to be a really interesting year in-state with all these players. These schools are coming in and trying to take these kids out of Nebraska. I mean, it's pretty bold, interesting stuff. So we'll get into that a little bit with Evan at the bottom. I want to remind everybody that our new sponsor is, our current sponsor is the Schwalbach Agency. Team Schwalbach is a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with four licensed insurance pros, saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys, motorcycles, boats, RVs, and off-road vehicles. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mostek, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. Free, no-obligation insurance reviews and quotes. They're going to make sure all their fellow Nebraska fans are properly protected. You can contact them at 402-590-5200 or www.nebraskaallstate.com. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thank you to Team Schwalbach. Off the top, hey, for people who are listening to the podcast, Dirk's 24th and Glory book came out, what was it, 2 years ago now, or about 18 months ago, right, Dirk?
Yeah.
And the documentary that was in the works for most of that time with Dirk and Brendan Sullivan, who no longer works at the World Herald, but did an incredible job of putting this together, and Johnny Otawa, who is the narrator, and did an incredible job of that. He's the best voice in the World Herald. That's up on our website now, and I just recommend that people watch it. It's really good, and it's a good companion piece to the book. It's different than the book in some ways. It's always helpful to be able to see people in their voice and just see their face and the way that they express things. I thought in particular, Ben Gray in the documentary is very powerful. So I hope people listen to that and watch it. It's on our website. So that's something I watched yesterday and appreciated watching. All right, moving on to Nebraska basketball. So they had an 8:45 tip last night. Game got done about 10:45. It just went on and on at the end. Nebraska lost 61-48. In an offensive performance against, admittedly, a good defensive team, that was kind of astonishing. The team had 22 points in the first 10 minutes of the game. 22. And they scored 26 points for the rest of the game. And over the middle 20 minutes of the game, they scored 13 points and committed more turnovers in that span. I'm sorry, more fouls in that span than they scored points. It was astonishing to behold an offense starting so good and then falling apart, literally falling apart halfway through the game. And Hoiberg didn't wave the white flag, but he used the word stop sign as an indication, a signal that maybe it's time to try to do something else on offense than let your guys run into a pile of defenders and fumble the ball away.
Sam, Wisconsin shot 32% from the field and won by 13. I challenge you or any of the college basketball analysts out there to find a result this year where a team shoots 32% and wins by 13 points.
On the road.
It's hard to lose 25 games in a row. It's hard. Like sometimes you just get lucky and you like make a bunch of shots. I gotta give Nebraska basketball credit. I mean, they're on a run right now that many teams would find impossible. And I think it goes back to, you know, roster construction. It goes back to player development. But it's clearly associated with a conference that's really, really good at a time when Nebraska is really, really bad. But man, if you would have told me this when Fred Hoiberg got hired, I wouldn't have believed it. I would not have believed it.
All three of you are basketball fans, and probably more so than I. Why am I covering the team? I enjoy covering the team. I'm really enjoying it, actually. I wish they'd win, but what is wrong with this team? What is wrong with the team since in the last 2 years? Because something's obviously wrong. And this isn't right, the way they look, the way they play. What's wrong?
Okay, I guess it's my turn.
Yeah, please.
You know, it's okay when they hired Hoiberg. His MO at Iowa State was to go get a bunch of guys from all over the place, and put them all together, and he has a style that it's very offense oriented. You take a lot of shots. Hopefully, you make a lot of shots. Well, Big Ten is kind of the opposite. It's the football. The parallel of this is very eerie to me. The Big Ten has a style of football and basketball, and Nebraska's trying to go the other way, and it ain't working. Okay, it ain't working. Okay, Hoiberg brought in a bunch of guys. Talk about player development. It's hard to develop the players when the whole team's gone. I mean, they all, except for a couple of guys, Thor and Yvonne, they're gone. So forget that. You bring in a bunch of new guys in. I mean, half the time it looks like it's open gym night out there. They're running down, firing up shots. They don't really have a point guard to speak of. I mean, you know, Ben, God love him, is trying, but and you're going up against teams that have a lot of veterans, have really good coaches, really good systems. But yeah, like Dirk said, you figured once in a while, the ball's not going in, and they're not making plays. You know, there was a play last night before halftime. Can't remember who it was for Nebraska, who was driving, and he just fell down. And Wisconsin got the ball, went down, and made a three. I mean, why does that happen? So I'm not picking on him. But here's the deal. We talk about offensive geniuses, and I try to keep things simple. I'm not very smart, so I try to keep things simple so I can understand things. But it's – The genius, you know, people love X's and O's. They're obsessed with X's and O's, and you know, everybody wants to feel smart. I get it. But the real genius in this is execution, getting play people to score touchdowns, catch the ball, throw the ball, and then in basketball, make shots. And that's the genius of it. And Wisconsin has a couple of geniuses. Coach football and basketball, and Nebraska's geniuses don't look very smart because they can't get their guys to execute. So that's my simple version of that.
I guess I would just add it to me. It's been what makes it even more interesting or confusing is when you see what Hoiberg did at Iowa State. Like recruiting guys to Iowa State and recruiting guys to Lincoln shouldn't be that big of a difference, right? And we've all been to Ames before. Like, I think Lincoln's a more attractive community to recruit to than Ames. And you see that in football too. I mean, with Matt Campbell, what he's done with the football team, and now he's extended. and football here continues to spin its wheels. You know, it almost removes kind of the geography piece a little bit of well, you can't recruit people to Nebraska. It's not where the talent is. There are peers in the Midwest that are doing just that and doing just fine. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's almost, you kind of can start going through a process of elimination to see kind of what's going on. And, you know, with Nebraska basketball, they tried the continuity thing with Tim Miles 7 years, and it got them, you know, no sit Sunday, got them an appearance in the tournament. And then they hired the big name, and it's year two. And like you said, Sam, the silver anniversary of this insane losing streak. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I don't know what you do. I mean, I was a San Antonio Spurs fan for a lot of years in their championship run. And those teams were defined by, you know, the role players knowing what they were good at, not trying to play outside themselves. And it does seem like night in and night out, some of these Nebraska players just don't know what their strengths are specifically. They try to do everything, and in the end, it just kind of ends up being very little.
Sam, I think there's a fine line in the mercenary culture that Fred Hoiberg has embraced between good enough and not good enough. And clearly at Iowa State, he was on the cutting edge of a trend in college basketball where, you know, when DeAndre Kane came available, there were not 50 programs trying to get DeAndre Kane. And I think, you know, Hoiberg took advantage of that. He credited his vision and foresight and player development and credibility as an NBA guy to bring those guys in and maximize them and bring them together. And at Nebraska, you can tell that the player quality in these first two classes just is not up to snuff. When they're not, I think it's a fine line, like I said, between good enough and not good enough, where when they're not good enough, you know, then all the weaknesses of the mercenary culture are exposed. So, you know, Teddy Allen is going to work on your team if you are 20-10 and everybody's in a good mood and the locker room is feeling good. Teddy Allen, all of his weaknesses are going to be on display if you are losing and everybody's struggling to get their shots and make their shots. So I just think it's a difference between the mercenaries 10 years ago, 8 years ago, were at a little bit higher level than they are right now. And because of that, you know, Fred Hoiberg is really suffering the consequences of the weaknesses of that culture.
Yeah. I mean, it would be good if the mercenaries, the guys that they're recruiting, the transfers, could shoot. And they, you know, the parallel I feel like is there between Frost and Hoiberg as it relates to their offenses is I feel like in Frost's offense, in order for it to really, really hum, of course, good offensive line helps, but, you know, you got to have the receivers who can get open and who can test you downfield, can test your defense downfield. And you have a quarterback who can throw it down there and throw it to him. Ironically enough, he had more of that in his first year than he did this year. And I'm not sure that they have all those pieces. In Hoiberg's offense, you need shooters because, of course, some of this is about hitting three-pointers. And when you hit three-pointers, you open up the lane and you're able to get to the rim and draw fouls and make shots. The getting to the rim part, Nebraska seems to understand pretty well. They draw quite a few fouls. They shoot quite a few free throws. They don't make a lot of them, but they at least execute that portion of it. The problem is they don't hit any threes, or they don't hit nearly enough of them. And so defenses clog the lane. They know how to do that. They draw charges. And Nebraska ends up having far more turnovers than they do good plays. The question is, how can Nebraska recruit players or transfers who shoot the three like Denzel Mahoney does at Creighton? Now, Denzel Mahoney was not on anybody's radar. You want to talk about a guy that wasn't on anybody's radar? He was at SEMO. And yet, when you look at Creighton now, Mahoney's a 35% three-point shooter. He's good, but he's a volume 35% three-point shooter. So in other words, you know you're going to get two or three 3-pointers from him every game. Damian Jefferson is not a bad 3-point shooter. He's about 34%. And of course, then they have Ballack and Zagorowski, and those guys are just good 3-point shooters. I feel like the part of the issue is that Hoiberg wants to play this offense, and for reasons that are not entirely clear to me, because I've just started covering it, they have compiled a roster that is actually more suited to walking the ball up the floor and sort of playing slow.
Sam, you could not. Teddy Allen is not a shooter. Teddy Allen is not. He's not. No, he's just not, period. He's not a fit for this system. At West Virginia, he almost never took threes. To build your offense, a shooting heavy offense around a guy who can't shoot. Delano Banton can't shoot. Trey McGowan.
He can't.
Can't really shoot. It's like, what is he doing? I mean, it's just.
Yeah. The issue with Teddy is that whether you define him as a shooter, he's one of their better shooters. That's part of it.
But he's not a shooter.
No, he's not. Not exactly. Not really.
You don't have to be Tim Legler or Steph Curry or Fred Hoiberg to recognize in November that this is not a good shooting roster.
Right.
So what are they doing? Like, why are they building a system around a skill that they don't have? And
I feel like they're going, I think Hoiberg kind of admitted on last night that they've got to change.
Yep.
That maybe what he's doing, you can sit there and say this, you guys should be able to do what we're asking you to do. But then when they can't do it and they repeatedly can't do it, at some point, you have to change or it's on you. And one of the things that frustrates me is you hear, like, you see these analysis of what a good shot is. And a good shot is defined by what we think a good shot is by analytics measure. A good shot in college is closer to the shots that you can actually make. In the NBA, I agree. You can always go out and find somebody, sign them, whatever you need to do. In college, you don't have that flexibility in season. And so you have to alter your offense to achieve what your players can actually do. And when your point guard is shooting 24% from the floor, from three, 24%, you can't do the things that you want to do. And I think Frost ran into that too. And he's trying to make the adjustment as well.
I know Tom's got to get going. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, just one more thing. I think you those are some great points. I wonder if you can make those changes now when you're not practicing, and you got basically 2 weeks left in the season. So
yeah, that's a good point. But
I agree though, and I thought that the same thing last night when I heard that when he put up the stop sign. Play to your strength. And you're right, the head coach has to know the strengths, and he's got a smart staff. God, they're playing good defense too, Sam. I mean, it's not like it's a total disaster. They can't get the offense figured out. And it's, I might pop back on here later, but after I'm done with this other thing. But, Frost, maybe he's figuring that out too, he's trying to do something he shouldn't be doing. So that's a whole other conversation, but with Hoiberg, he's very smart. And so I think he'll figure this out, but it's a tough league to when things aren't fitting and you're searching, it's a tough league for that. So I'll bid you adieu, and maybe I'll pop back in later.
You know, Sam, I want to ask you a question that may sound rhetorical, but I don't mean it that way.
Okay.
How do you bottom out in basketball? Like, how do you build a team? Because, I criticize this mercenary environment that Nebraska basketball has become the last few years. And I don't know what the alternative is. I mean, Danny Neat came in 1986 and he redshirted all of his best recruits. And, it took him 3 or 4 years to develop. That's not college basketball anymore. So I don't know what I'm not sure I know what bottoming out and building, you know, a program the quote unquote right way is anymore. I'm critical of this culture, but it doesn't seem like there's another culture available where you can just bring kids in and you know, bring them along slowly. And you know, obviously the guys that Nebraska needs to develop, I mean, I would use, you know, Yvonne and
nice.
I mean, there have been examples where they've just completely failed to develop players. So I don't want to let them off the hook. But the flip side of that is college basketball is a mercenary sport. Like, yeah. you have to get the players. And if you don't get the players, you're out of luck. So, I mean, I hate to simplify it too much, but not every place can be Creighton where, you know, you sort of create this system where you know, everybody comes along slowly and gets a little bit better each year. I mean, it feels like it's pretty simple in the end. Are your players good enough or not?
Yeah. Well, it's a question that, like, especially as the game was going on, and then I thought about it a little last night and again this morning, and it's probably just something I have to continue to think about as it relates to basketball. I think football, I could talk that around in circles and say they're retrofitting their program to be more like the Big Ten, and simultaneously they just might catch a sailor's wind and actually be trending towards something that the game was going to anyway with the bigger tight ends and the bigger receivers. I think Nebraska came here with the mindset of slots and outside receivers, and I think they are falling into, oh boy, look at this. There's a lot of good tight ends around this area. And by the way, they want to come here. And oh, by the way, that's where the NFL is. I think it's going to be okay at Nebraska if they can find a way to run the stupid ball without using the quarterback every other carry. I think they're going to be okay. In basketball, you know, you make a great point, Dirk. And again, I defer to some degree to you because I know that you watch this a ton and you're invested in it and understand the college game at a higher level than I do. I would say that some of the teams in the Big Ten, including Iowa, are not mercenary programs. Iowa is Iowa, and a lot of those guys are there. They were developed. They were recruited. I think there are a lot of things that you can say about Fran McCaffrey's comportment and his personality. You cannot question his ability to find and develop players and cohese that into a pretty damn good offensive team. Greg McDermott has better character than Fran McCaffrey. But simultaneously, I think you can say something about the way Greg builds his teams. And he added two crucial transfers. So Jefferson and Mahoney are two of the five best players on that team, and they're from somewhere else. And I've asked John about this, like, how in the hell did they know that Denzel Mahoney was going to be this? And they knew something other people didn't know. But, you know, Minnesota's probably not that much of a mercenary program. They have a little bit with Liam Robbins from Drake. Illinois, their two best players are recruits. Then they just got two more incredible freshmen who are in their top seven.
I guess my question is this. Your answer is good. My point is, when you're starting from scratch, I mean, you can go out and sign five high school kids.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how many of them are going to stick around after you lose 17 games in a row after the first year. I mean,
I don't know.
I'm not trying to lay them off the hook, but
no,
but this is hard. Yeah. And I think that the point that I keep coming back to that just boggles my mind is, why did they think these guys could shoot? I mean, that's just dumb. And I that's too blunt, this is not a good shooting team, and they should have known it from the very start. And the same thing was true last year. And it's like, stop trying to put a square peg in a round hole. Figure out another way to play. You're setting yourself up for failure if you think Delano Banton is going to, you know, is going to be Nikola Jokic out there.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough with Banton. You know, there's things about his game that you absolutely love. He can't hit a jump shot. You know, early in the game, Wisconsin was worried about him going around the corner. So they were bringing people up and he was able to dump a couple off to the posts. Then they adjusted that a little bit, and I'm like, there's no reason to not follow the post down, because you're going to force Banton to shoot a three, and he can't make it. So Wisconsin adjusted that a little bit. Then there were circumstances in the game where the posts are diving and they're open and they didn't get the ball. I mean, they just the Webster and Allen didn't pass him the ball, or Banton's able to get a guy to cheat off a man with a post dive into the rim again. He throws it to man doesn't shoot. He dribbles, he travels. Like, I don't know why, like, I'm not sure why man wanted to dribble there, or why at the end of the first half, he's trying to dribble. Clearly he's a great spot up shooter. He is a good spot up shooter. Off the dribble, not his game. So I feel like there's things the players individually are doing that they're not that good at doing, or they're just missing the reads or whatever. And I don't know, you can slow it down. I'm not sure it's going to get a lot better, because some of the stuff that they're doing just isn't clicking home. But in an alternate reality, Fred Hoiberg could have walked into this program after he was hired, surveyed the landscape, and said, you know what? We got a top 150 point guard in the state at Chucky Hepburn and a top 20 player in the nation in Hunter Salas. I'm going to make my entire program about getting those guys here. Everything. They're going to be the whole thing. And it may take us 2 or 3 years, but I'm going to get those two guys above and beyond everybody else. And then I'm going to get Isaac Trout. And then maybe you have something. Like, maybe you have a nucleus that not only captures the imagination of kids in the state, but can go win some basketball games. I think the approach that was taken was understandable based on his history, but I'm not sure that that is a sustainable approach at Nebraska if you don't win really big. And I think Tim Miles took a very similar approach when he got here. Remember, he got Pitchford from Florida and Pettaway from Texas Tech and Leslie Smith from SMU and who knows who else from God knows where else. And it worked for a one tournament bid. And then, you know, you remember the following season, it completely fell apart. They lost some games they shouldn't have lost. It lost to Rhode Island and somebody else, somebody out in Hawaii. I think it was Hawaii. They lost some games early. Then they lost a bye game. Then Pettaway, you know, had the personal issues. And then they're fighting on the court. And then they had the biggest collapse than anyone could have imagined. And then it took him like 3 years to build it back. And he got another mercenary group with Palmer and Copeland. And who am I forgetting? And he paired those with Glenn Watson and Isaiah Roby, and that, you know, and it kind of worked. And guess what? Even if they had made the tournament in Miles' final year, he was starting over again. He was, because Roby was probably going to go to the NBA. Copeland was gone. Watson was gone. Palmer was gone. And you're starting over again. The difference is, my understanding, the intel that I've always gotten, is Miles had a plan for some of these in-state kids that he had seen the light, and he realized that he had to get some of these guys, and that he had a plan to try to get Hunter Salas and Chucky Hepburn and, you know, maybe another kid from Millard North or whatever. And as far as I can tell so far, Nebraska has struggled to recruit these in-state studs. Chucky Hepburn's going to go to Wisconsin, and he's going to start for three seasons. He's going to be good, really good. And Hunter Salas, nobody knows exactly what he's going to be yet, but he would have been he's going to be pretty good, really good. Isaac Trout could be a 15 to 18 point a game scorer in college. So it's unlikely any of those players are coming to Nebraska. We know two of them aren't. And I don't know about Isaac Trout. I mean, maybe, but you've got to sell that particular kid on something more than one day we'll get the right collection of transfers here that make it worth your while to stick around, because any freshman who comes to the program now better have a connection. Bryce McGowan's connection is Trey. He's coming to joint play his brother. So I don't know what a freshman's coming into right now when they're not even sure who they're going to play with.
Okay. Evan, that's a lot, I know. Evan, chime in for a second. I got to look something up.
I would just say, I think there's a similarity too from football to basketball where there's, both programs have reached the point where there's this tension between they have a long-term vision for what they want and a short-term vision of, oh crap, we need to win some more games now. Like, I think, you know, football hit that last year as the year went on, and they just kind of needed to win games, you know, system be darned. And with basketball, it just felt like as the Big Ten season has gone on, and as you guys said, Fred Hoiberg alluded to this after the game last night, this idea that, okay, we have an offensive system, we know what we want to do, but my goodness, we need to win some games right now. And the personnel we have don't fit that. And so I think you're in a tough spot where you have a vision as a coach for what you want this program to be. The guys that you have can't execute that vision. So what do you do? Do you continue to try to develop toward that? Or do you abandon or put a pause on your development just to win some games in a season that ultimately won't live up to what you want it to be anyway? It's a really tough spot. We're kind of, you're darned if you do and you're darned if you don't, and nobody's satisfied.
Well, I agree with you, Evan. I will say this. When you bring in older players, you're not bringing them in to develop. Now, granted, this has been a horrible year for Nebraska basketball with the COVID pause and all that, and they really were playing better before the break. But
Sam, Evan,
this isn't developmental. I mean, they got to find a way to win a game, because it's just soul-crushing to lose this many in a row.
Yeah.
Spring of 2016. This is after Petaway, after Pitchford, after their mini, NCAA tournament peak in 2014.
Yeah.
Miles signs what he called was the best recruiting class in school history, or somebody called it that. Glenn Watson, Jack McVay, Michael Jacobson, Ed Morrow, Bakari Evelyn. Okay. We're going to bring them along slowly. They're going to grow up together. They almost function as a starting five the way they are. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be wonderful. Within 2 years, two of them have busted, two of them have transferred. It's like, it didn't work.
Right.
Ty Webster was supposed to be a four-year guy. Didn't work. Siobhan Shields, four-year guy. Didn't work. Like, I feel like Nebraska has tried. They've tried the grassroots developmental thing. Miles did, and it didn't work. So he started, flailing at Andrew White and guys like that. It just feels like they've tried, the players just aren't good enough. And again, some of that is style, some of it is league, some of it is player development, all that stuff. I understand that, but goodness. I'm speechless. I'm gonna tweet this morning, but I found this yesterday. This is almost sick and twisted. But in the spring of 2014, when Creighton and Nebraska both went to the NCAA tournament in San Antonio, Iowa State was there also. And they played North Carolina, and it was very clear at that point that Hoiberg had something special as a head coach. A couple times that spring, I mentioned that if I was starting a program with any young coach in the country, I would choose Fred Hoiberg. Now, this is not like Husker, Husker homerism, because this is back when he was the head coach at Iowa State. But I said, honestly, if I could buy stock in one coach under the age of 45, it'd be Hoiberg. He'll win an NBA championship in his career. He's just lost 25 straight Big Ten games. Oh my gosh. What happened to this guy?
Well, people can watch last night, and I think they're going to find that he set him up pretty well. I mean, he handles a lot of the offense. And if you watch it, because I knew as I was watching that first half, I'm like, God dang, this stuff is there, and these guys are not they're not making the plays. And so I went home, I came home, and I was like, I got to watch that first half again. And I'm telling you, they should have scored 36 to 40 points in that first half. And I mean, not even fancy stuff, like just throwing the ball to the guy who's open. Man, taking the three instead of trying to dribble or trying to do whatever he was doing. Like there's just these moments where you're like, this is not the coach. Unless it's on the coach, because the players, they are his players. And they really all are his players. Like it's not, oh, he inherited this group and he's just being nice to him. No, I mean, these are all his guys. And so like, there is this part of like, man, he has to be frustrated because that stuff looks pretty good. Like the actions are good and Nebraska executes all the way up until the point where they don't. And then it just looks weird. And then the second half was, you know, we're irritated and we're getting panicky and we're doing some dumb stuff and taking some bad shots. And so the second half was a little different, but
you know,
they should have been up 40-30 at halftime. That there's no question in my mind. They should have been up by 10. And he coached them to that. Like he coached a really good first half, out coached Greg Gard, and just to not see your team be able to do it because they can't do it must be enormously frustrating.
Here's the other part of this. Fred Hoiberg in 2012 was coming straight out of an NBA front office. He was a couple years out of the NBA. He was young. He had tremendous, you know, charisma, credibility, aura, whatever you want to say. I think it's much easier to convince really good players to come play for you when you're at that stage of your career, you know, and you've done the things that you've done. It's harder. It gets harder. You know, we're 10 years down the road. He's a fired NBA coach. He's you know, lost 25 games in a row. The shine is off, right? Like it becomes much harder at this point to persuade, you know, 5-star high school kids or, you know, 4-star transfer kids or whatever, that you are their ticket to the NBA when you've just lost 25 games in a row.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that, you know, is going to be an obstacle here. Is this is not the same Fred Hoiberg credibility that he had 10 years ago.
But what if he had Creighton's roster though, Dirk? Wouldn't they have the same record? I mean, is this about the coaching or is this about the roster?
About 10 years ago. Obviously, there's more competition in the transfer market than there used to be. But Fred Hoiberg also just doesn't have that same weight that he did as a, you know, I mean, he could literally tell guys 10 years ago, I will get you to the NBA.
Right.
And he had the proof to show it, you know, within a couple of years at Iowa State. Man, when you, it gets harder. It's sort of similar to Scott Frost in some ways. You know, when you go through a couple tough years, that's a harder persuasion to pull off.
But doesn't it seem like the common thread in all this is not Hoiberg, it's Nebraska, isn't it? Like Hoiberg had success elsewhere, hasn't had it at Nebraska. The same was true for Tim Miles. The same was true for Doc Sadler. It was. I mean, they had success at lower levels, obviously, but
yeah.
But like, what is it about Nebraska?
In my opinion, Tim Miles had two better teams at Nebraska than he ever had at Colorado State. So I think Tim is Tim. That's who he is.
Maybe so. I just,
Evan, it's in the wallpaper, man. Like it seeps into the DNA. I agree with
you. I mean,
nobody else. And again, I like Miles as a guy, and I think I'm sure there's things he would wish that he had redone in his career here. Okay. No one else had a new arena to recruit to. He's the only one. Doc didn't get that chance. No one else had that arena to recruit to. Nobody else had Kyrie Thomas that he didn't recruit, and Justin Patton that he didn't recruit, and Nicoya Gal that he didn't get, and all this. I mean, nobody else had that. And so he owns what he, you know, and he had total fan support, universally loved. You know, he did what he could do, and he did what he did in the end. And no, it's not Bill Moose's fault for some sports psychotic. No, that's
not. I mean, let me just, it reminds me of growing up as a Cubs fan.
And football, though, yes, I agree. There's something there with football, like, and it needs to get figured out.
It reminds me of growing up as a Cubs fan and seeing Lou Piniella come in, and they have these losing streaks, and he just is sitting at the presser going like, I don't know. I usually do pretty well at this. It's like that. Like, that's what it reminds me of when I see Hoiberg's post-game pressers, when he's just like, exhausted. Yeah. He's like, I don't know. I mean, I know the game. I've had success. I don't know why it's not working. It feels the same to me. Like there just needs to be some kind of major overhaul because it sucks the life out of people.
Evan, it's a great point. It's like when these guys, you know, they come to Nebraska and suddenly opponents are allowed to put one more person on the field. You know, it's like, wait a second, this is supposed to work. This has worked everywhere else that I've been. Why isn't it working now? And, you know, you're talking about the new arena, and that reminds me, I think one more common thing that these two programs have in common, that's redundant, but football missed a huge opportunity when Ndamukong Suh left. I mean, there was a real opportunity there, and Sam, you've written about it. Yeah, you know, after 2009, this should have been such an easy place to recruit to. They should have been freaking D-line you, and they just whiffed. They just totally missed. And within 2 years, you know, the defensive line was the worst part of the entire roster. And I think basketball went through a similar thing after 2014. You know, first year, the new arena, we're going to the NCAA tournament, baby. We went on this big run. There was such a huge opportunity there from a recruiting standpoint. And they just whiffed. They just whiffed. And man, now that arena is 8 years old and it not quite as shiny as it used to be. And
Hoiberg has recruited. I mean, rankings wise, this is a really good class. Like, it's Bryce McGowan's is really good.
But it's not a deep class, Sam. It's just based on one, you know, two guys essentially. So
yeah, yes, that's true. You have to reimagine. You have to reimagine recruiting now with the transfer portal in mind. So we just don't know what players are going to attract. But what I will say is that the players that they did attract in this most recent cycle, it would have been good to have gotten maybe one more shooter. Although apparently Trevor Lakes he just doesn't play. Again, Fred, I think, is reluctant to say anything too harsh about a team in a difficult, difficult moment. But, you know, the guy is eligible to play, and he's played 4 minutes in the last three games. So since they've come back, he's played 4 minutes, and I don't think he's taken a shot.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a Big Ten athlete. I mean, I agree that he should probably get more chances, but he's not a player who's going to change their fate, in my opinion.
That's fair. But, and even with Jack McVay, and he shot more than Lakes does. Neither was Paul Volander or Greg Baronic. But so there must be something there where he just can't do it. I mean, is he as good as Drake Baronic, Dirk?
Hey, don't you besmirch Drake Baronic.
I'm not. That's my point. I'm saying, like, what? Like, how is, you know, back in the day, it was Drake, right? Yeah. It was Drake. Like, how was Doc able to get, you know, 5 points a game out of him and on a better team than this team currently is? Like, and again, the Big Ten's very good. It's very good. So it's better than the Big 12 that Doc was in. I get all that. But gosh dang, if like these players that they recruit, they're not able to kick them over into what kick, you know, they're not able to develop into the thing that they want them to be. At some point, raw wins and losses matters. And it isn't about a spreadsheet of like, well, here's where these guys came from and here's what they did at the places and here was their recruiting ranking when they did it. No, I mean, it's just winning and losing. Yep. That said, Hoiberg still believes they're going to be a good – they're going to win games this year.
You said something at one point about football that I find useful now. You know, I think it was in reference to the 2016 Ohio State game. You know, you can go to Columbus to the Horseshoe and lose 49-17 and survive and move on. You can't lose 62-3. And I feel like Nebraska men's basketball is in this, they're in this terrible cycle where, okay, you're going to struggle, fine. Like, you're going to have a losing season, fine. You can't do what Tim Miles did and lose freaking 12 out of your last 13 games to where it bottoms out and you have to start over. Right. You can't do what Fred Hoiberg has done and lose 25 in a row where, you know, you'd have to be a glutton for punishment to stick around and say, I want to be part of that again. Like, these are just soul crushing things. One winter after another, January, February, especially, if you go through those periods and you don't make the NCAA tournament, if you go 14-17, whatever. Everybody comes back and says, oh, we'll do better next year.
Yes.
And they're just bottoming out.
Yeah.
I mean, just, I mean, like, it's like five of the last 7 years, they've just absolutely bottomed out as a program in February. And it's just so hard to recover and pick up the pieces with the same roster, you know, the next, you almost have to start over. And that they're just in this perpetual cycle of starting over.
Yep. No, it's enjoy the game tomorrow night, Dirk. Dirk's covering a game for me tomorrow night. Nebraska's going to play Friday night, then they're going to play Sunday. And then my understanding is in between Sunday, they might move the Maryland game to the road, move that game up. It's currently a home game. Then put another home game in there and then play Purdue later.
Wait, why would they put
like Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday or something?
Why would they switch a home game to the road?
Because they're going to go out and play at Penn State and Maryland is close.
Oh my gosh.
So that may or may not happen. I don't know that for sure, but it could go Friday, Sunday, Tuesday ish, maybe Thursday, then Sunday again.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean it's intense, man. So you know they're gonna play a lot of basketball. So I appreciate you covering that game tomorrow night. You'll get to watch the best 1-2 punch in the Big Ten in Io and Kofi, and they're fun to watch. So enjoy.
I had Iowa in my number one basketball rankings in the preseason, guys, and Fran McCaffrey is he's showing me that I was wrong. Iowa is just, there's something about that program they can never like be the best version of themselves.
Yep. Some ways they're like Creighton. I'm not trying to knock Creighton. Iowa actually should be better than Creighton this year, but in some ways they're like that. And we'll see what happens in the NCAA tournament. I know than watching Wisconsin last night, I watched a 5 seed that's going to lose in the first round to a 12. Wisconsin's not that good. They're just not, they don't impress me. I saw a team that's going to lose in the first round personally. That's what I think will happen. So they're unimpressive to me. I thought Nebraska matched up with them pretty well talent-wise. I'm not sure how they do it and how they beat the teams they beat. Good for Greg Gard that he's able to pull that off. But
are you guys excited about the new NCAA tournament this year where it's like Monday, March 17th or whatever it is going to be like a all-day basketball? It's just going to be strange.
Yeah, I don't love that.
No, the Thursday, Friday, how can you ever top that? Those are two of the best days in sports.
I think it would have been better to start it, you know, in its traditional spot. But so the Big Ten teams are basically going to go right from the end of their conference tournament right to the start of the NCAA tournament.
Okay, so if they're I have so many issues with this. If they're going to stay in Indianapolis, which would appear to be the case, what if you lose your conference tournament game on Friday and you don't play again until next Friday? You're just supposed to stay in the state of Indiana for 7 days?
Yes, I believe so. Mm. There's a lot of steak and shakes there. Those are good. You can go to St. Elmo's
one night. How is that practical? I this stuff boggles my mind. It's like, what are you asking 21-year-olds to do? Like, you can't, okay, just put yourself in the body of a 21-year-old that week, okay? You lose your Big Ten tournament quarterfinal on Friday or semifinal on Saturday. You don't play your NCAA tournament opener. You play in Fort Wayne the next Friday, okay? 2 hours away. So you're gonna spend 7 days or 6 days at the Fort Wayne Courtyard by Marriott where you can't go anywhere. You don't want to hang out anywhere. Because the worst thing in the world you could do is get COVID right before the NCAA tournament and potentially affect your team and knock your team out of the tournament. Like, this is insane. And I don't want to miss the NCAA tournament, but I just can't believe the stuff they're asking players to do.
I can't either.
Fort Wayne.
Are they playing in Fort Wayne? I love it if they are.
They're going to have to play all over the place, right? They're going to go down and play at Milan.
Branch Lick.
A Okay, so I'm looking up the Fort Wayne arena here. It's the Allen County War Coliseum.
Hey, you know,
cool looking, actually.
You know who could tell us about that is Gary Sharp. I'm sure he's been there.
I'll tell you, it's a great it's a hockey arena too. It's actually a very cool arena. I mean, really, it's like an old field house, and it's kind of cool looking. I hope they're able to play some basketball there because it's neat.
Guys, the
Allen County War Memorial Coliseum.
I think the big story of the NCAA tournament is not going to be, I mean, obviously who wins it and all that stuff is, there's going to be some good stories, but the big story is going to be when a team gets COVID and has to essentially forfeit its NCAA tournament game or can't, you know, because you can't just push a game back 4 days. Right. Like if you can't play, you're out.
That's right. I guess advantage Michigan. Actually disadvantage Michigan because most of those players didn't get it up there. They were just quarantined.
You right? Have like a backup team ready to play. Like you're the next, you're the first four out. Those are the first four that pop in if the other guys get COVID.
Hey, you know who's a perfect candidate for that? Nebraska. Yeah. If they've all had COVID.
And that team would like assume the seed of whoever gets knocked out.
Nebraska becomes the two seed in the Midwest. Tom's back. We're talking about the nightmare NCAA tournament scenarios where these teams are cooped up in the state of Indiana for a week, not daring to go outside of their hotel room for fear that they might get COVID and knock their program out of the tournament.
Yeah, McDermott was just talking about how his players have had to spend a lot of time together this year, and he almost kind of inferred that they're kind of going crazy. So I can imagine. Yeah. I wonder how they're going to let us cover all those things. So I don't know. It's going to be a weird tournament.
Inside of your four hotel walls, Tom, that's probably what we'll be looking at. Well, you've come back just in time for us to talk about football. Cause we really did go through basketball. So feel free to weigh in on Evan. Nebraska hired some guys this week. Would you like to fill everyone in on who they are and what purpose they'll have?
Sure, Sam. They hired Marcus Castro Walker as their director of player development. He spent 2016 with Frost at UCF in a similar role. He's been at Arizona State for a couple of different stints since then. We've talked a little bit about that, but he's assuming that role that that Ron Brown had held the last 3 years. Essentially someone who's going to be immersed in student athlete life, campus housing, academics, as Scott Frost said, campus police, if someone gets picked up for jaywalking, something like that. So just somebody who is, I think, of more importance in this era of the transfer portal when guys can leave at the drop of a hat. It helps to have somebody in this position to come alongside them to help them get plugged into the community. And so by all accounts, he'll be helpful in that role. Keenan Lowe comes in as an offensive analyst, spent time playing under Chip Kelly, Scott Frost, and Matt Lubick at Oregon. Had been an analyst with UCLA and Chip Kelly last year. Notably, for the casual fan, was the guy who helped disarm a student at a high school in Oregon to help prevent a potentially dangerous situation or a school shooting. So he's a guy who, younger guy, looks like he probably will end up being a position coach in his future somewhere someday, but Nebraska gets him as an analyst right now, someone who's familiar with the kind of offense that Scott Frost wants to run. And then the name who may be burying the lead here, Bill Bush, who Husker fans remember from the Bill Callahan era, coordinated special teams, coached safeties in Lincoln, was the safeties coach at LSU the last few years, including last year under Bo Pelini. He comes to Nebraska. He had a lot of other options too, by all accounts, but decided to come back home where he has a lot of family still. And he'll help out on the defensive side. And you consider some of the names and the people that he's coached under in recent years, having another voice in the room should be helpful. And then I think what fans probably are most interested in is his recruiting history. He brought a lot of good players to a lot of schools. Guys like Prince Amukamara, Eric Hag, Zach Bowman at Nebraska were guys that he brought in. And so while he can't go on the road and recruit, He can do behind the scenes work. He can work the phones, much like Jonathan Rutledge, the special teams analyst last year, brought in Connor Culp as a kicker. You know, Bush can have some kind of a role there. So LSU's paying him this year. It's a great deal for Nebraska financially. It's a great deal for them in terms of experience. And yeah, I think three, you know, just good supportive hires kind of behind the scenes. Fans might not, you know, pay a lot of attention or see a lot. We probably won't hear from them in terms of interviews, but definitely guys that'll add to the operation.
Earlier this week, Iowa State gave Matt Campbell $3 million more for his assistant coaching pool, which I have interpreted as $1 million more per year, not as $3 million more per year, which would put him in like Michigan level. At any rate, Iowa State, if they put a million on, is at $5.1 million for its 10 assistants. Nebraska has $5 million for its 11, if you include Zach Duvall. Nebraska, as of late December, was around 29th in assistant coaching salary pool. But in reality, that's closer to probably 32nd or 33rd, because according to US Today's database, Penn State, Notre Dame, USC, those aren't in there. So I'm confident that Penn State and Notre Dame at least are paying their assistants more than Nebraska, and I suspect USC is too. So I'm going to say Nebraska is somewhere in the 33, 32, 33, 34 range. Is that where Nebraska needs to be? Is that going to get it done? Does Nebraska need to pay more and offer more and have more money available in order to get where they want to go, given where they're located geographically?
What I don't think you want to do is pay guys just to pay guys. Like, you know, Nebraska's had four losing seasons in a row. I don't think they should throw another $100,000 at their, you know, at Barrett Rood. I love Barrett Rood, but, you know, if you're going to have that pool of money, you need to be more ambitious with who you go after. So I think it's a little bit of a nuanced question. With the staff that they have right now, I think they basically have the pool that they need. If Scott Frost decides, hey, this offensive coordinator thing is not working, I need to go out and get a real hired gun, then I think at that point you might see Nebraska throw another $500,000 into the pool. But so I don't know. I think with the somewhat limited ambition that Frost has had with this assistant staff, it's the number is probably appropriate.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You know, money just doesn't mean quality. A lot of times you're probably overpaying for somebody who's average. You know, at Michigan, Jim Harbaugh had an old gray beard, a defensive coordinator. What's his name? Don Brown. And that didn't work out very well. So as much as I want to say Scott Frost should go hire an old gray beard to help him out, sometimes those guys don't work out. So I can't hire coaches for him. He's got to know, but he clearly wants to have people around him that he knows, he trusts. That doesn't mean that they're yes men. I don't know. But these guys have to coach better. It has not been good so far. So
here are the top 10 schools in terms of assistants and coaching salaries: Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Texas A&M, LSU, Georgia, Auburn, Texas, Tennessee, Florida, Oklahoma.
Well, Texas is a classic example of what I just said. They pay all this money, and what'd they get?
Is Bill Bush the gray beard that we've been talking about? I mean, can he be a truth teller in that building? Or, I'm asking the question. I'm not suggesting that he is, but I said 2 weeks ago on this podcast that what Frost needs is somebody who can come into the building and say, Scott, I know you think you're doing this well, but you're not doing this well. And you need to change your strategy. Can he be that voice in the room or not?
I don't know that he will be. That's a great question. And his role, and I'm kind of thinking, and I'm not sure Ron Brown would do it, but yeah, there's got to be somebody in Scott's ear. You're right.
You need a special assistant to the head coach, somebody yeah. who's not a head coach or not an assistant, who is a conciliary. And that may be very well what eventually Ron does. I don't know. Yeah. But I think it's got to be somebody who isn't even affiliated with the assistants that you have on staff as like a check on just like a quality control check on the whole yeah. operation, which, you know, Nick Saban doesn't have that, but Ohio State kind of does. It's Urban Meyer's former strength coach. He's kind of this person. He's a weird role where he's not really the strength coach. He's more like a, I don't even know. But he, you know, he is the strength coach, but he's more of like the program confidant or something. I don't know if Scott Frost wants that or not. But yeah, they probably need to have a different voice. I think for Scott, and one of the challenges is, you know, who is his boss? Like, is it Moose? Is that the person who, I mean, I think Moose is a, you know, is like a go-between and an ally. Did any of you guys have any, Tom, I know you had thoughts about Moose's comments about former player criticism. Did you have any other thoughts about that or?
About Moose?
Yeah, what he said, which I didn't make it the top of my story, so I didn't think it was the biggest thing that he said. I thought his comments about Adrian Martinez running, finally being able to run the spread pace offense was more notable than his comments about the former players. But I think the people picked up on the former players more than the comments about Adrian.
You know, I keep waiting for Moose to snap and start yelling at people because it's funny. The emails I get and the comments I hear from people are starting to blame Moose. Like, you know, especially when they're dragging Hoiberg into this now. It's like, you know, who's this Bill Moose guy? What, you know? I mean, what a terrible, you know, AD. He can't hire the right people. Just like, just laugh. I mean, he hired the two Gold Dust twins. I mean, the guys that were untouchable and right. You know, bring everything back and young geniuses. And I mean, I'm not sure what you'd do differently if you're Bill Moose. I mean, you okay. couldn't do better, could you? I guess. No. But it's fine. I keep waiting for him to snap and, you know, start criticizing Frost, everybody.
Yeah,
I don't think he ever will, but I just think I keep waiting for it to happen.
I will say this, that yeah. Bill Moose in theory could have hired a different basketball coach. He could have said, you know, I'm a little concerned about Fred's time in the NBA. Let's hire Nate Oates. They could have done that. But I thought it would have been very unlikely.
They could have hired Tyronn Lue.
It could have. Yeah. Does Tyronn Lue really, I mean, does he really want to be a college coach?
He was very interested.
They could have hired him. That's very true. He could have hired Tyronn Lue, and that would have been a very, very popular hire. That would have been a very popular hire. Although I think Tyronn Lue is where he needs to be. FYI. And needs in is doing just fine. But yeah, that's a very good point. But football, there was no one else. I don't think that was, I mean, if he had wanted someone else, which he didn't, everybody thought it should be Scott Frost. There wasn't going to be anyone else. And based on the stories that Henry Cordes wrote and the things that we've learned, I kind of think Tom Osborne was the clinching thing on Scott taking the job, not Bill Moose. So. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I think Bill has managed that football situation, you know, pretty well. Now a lot of people are critical of, but I guess I was interested, like he's trying to defend his coach and the point that he's making about he's been around for like 35 years. The point he's making is that players who are in elite programs don't always understand what it's like to be bad. Is on its face a fair comment. I think there was just the reaction was somewhere along the lines of how can he say that we don't understand what it's like to suffer or to struggle or don't you understand that it's much harder to go from being the number seven team in the country to number one than it is from number 75 to number 32? And frankly, I think that's kind of true. I mean, it's actually pretty hard to take the final step, see Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. I mean, the guys dang near got fired over not being 11-0 instead of 9-3. Bo Pelini got fired for only winning nine games a year. So there's some argument, there's some point to that.
I just love that Moose is like, he's like the, you know, the sibling who says the things that the head coach can't say, and you know, or you know, he's constantly sticking up for Scott Frost and saying things, whether it's Big Ten schedules or whatever. I love the you know, the bluntness of Bill Moose, and you know, he almost never fails to produce some sort of interesting chatter. And as much as, you know, he draws some criticism for saying the things that he says, as a consumer and as a journalist, I love it, because the guy will certainly speak
absolutely
his mind. He'll speak his mind even when I don't agree with what he says. I find what he says to be fascinating.
And no question about it. No question. We're not going to do recruiting. We've talked long enough. I want to end on this. This is a non-Nebraska note, but I think it's kind of funny. Do you know who Urban Meyer and the Jacksonville Jaguars just hired as their director of sport performance, i.e. their head strength and conditioning coach?
Chris Doyle.
Chris Doyle from Iowa.
Wow.
Urban Meyer is an interesting person. I don't think that's going to work, but maybe we'll see. And I'm not talking about Doyle. I don't think that'll work either, but I don't know that Urban Meyer in the NFL is going to work. I just don't.
Yeah. If he tries to bully those guys, that
right. Exactly. Like, what college coaches in the NFL, with the exception of, you know, Pete Carroll, who's done really well, although he was an NFL coach first, and you know, of course, Barry Switzer rolled the ball out and won a Super Bowl. That remains one of my favorite, you know, Barry Switzer is the Dallas Cowboys head coach. Just sitting there smiling. Anyway, that's all we've got for this week. I hope everyone has a good weekend.